Well, I think one thing we're going to do right out of the gate is define what pro-life is.
Scott Klusendorf talking about his presentation at the 2018 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
That term is now being confused. It's being put up for grabs, and we're going to make clear what the pro-life syllogism is, how we can make that case for life with people who don't accept biblical authority, who maybe don't even know what it is we stand for, and are subject to being confused. So there's a crying need to clarify what pro-life means, what our actual arguments are, and then we'll look at five bad ways people argue against the pro-life case in the public square so that we can be prepared to give good, solid, Christ-honoring answers.
You can meet and hear Scott Klusendorf making the case for life at the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, June 8th and Saturday, June 9th in Collinsville, Illinois. Learn more about conference speakers and topics and register at issuesetc.org.
I have been asked the question several times, many times, why does God allow it? Why does a God of love and mercy that we read about and hear about allow such a terrible thing to happen? I have to confess that I never fully understand, even for my own satisfaction. I have to accept by faith that God is a God of love and mercy and compassion, even in the midst of suffering. But the lesson of this event has not only been about mystery, but we've already heard. It's a lesson of a community coming together.
That's the late Billy Graham speaking at the Oklahoma City Bombing Memorial on April 23rd, 1995. How do you sum up a life, any life, that spans an entire century, that spans a time in American history before the media as we know it, maybe simply just the print media, and into radio and television and internet and beyond, a life that stands astride two centuries, the 20th and the 21st century. Any life, much less the life of a guy like Billy Graham. There have been some valiant attempts I have seen over the last 24 hours to sum that up by way of doing a biography or an obituary in the major media outlets. We're going to talk about media coverage of the life and work of Billy Graham. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. Terry Mattingly joins us. He's Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City. He's author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion. And he's founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Glad to be here.
How should we evaluate the media coverage of Graham's life here at the end of it? Especially given the atmosphere, the media atmosphere that is all Trump all the time.
Well, those two things certainly are interacting at this point. You'd have to start off by something you alluded to, which is that even in a prime news organization like the New York Times that gave a tremendous amount of space to its main obituary on Billy Graham, or like, say, Christianity Today, which clearly has pre-published what amounts to a small book of materials they have gathered about the life of the founder of the magazine, or even, say, the Charlotte Observer, his hometown newspaper, which, when you look at the structure of what they did, has clearly been working for a long time. Simply stated, Graham's life is too big and too complex. And he worked through so many different changes in American life and media and everything else that trying to write about him in the context of a newspaper or magazine article is just horrifying to have to try to do that as a journalist. The number one question a journalism professor hears from young journalism students is, how do I know what goes in the lead? You know, what do you put in the first sentence? What is the initial focus of an article? Now tell me, what's the lead on Billy Graham's life? Yeah, you know, write a one-sentence radio report on him. I mean, it's staggering. It's very similar to the death of Pope John Paul II, except I would say in some ways Billy lived a more complex life in the sense that John Paul II, though a man of the world, was a European who most of his actions was defined by Europe, although he appealed to other parts of the world. Billy was, you know, tied one way or another culturally to the American South. Your question about Trump is very simple, but I think it hides another question. I don't know how Billy Graham would handle Trump. But I think it's possible that he would handle Trump the same way he handled Bill Clinton. And I've been arguing for at least a year now that Bill Clinton and Donald Trump are in bizarre ways the political soulmates of our era. If you look at their problems and a lot of things about them other than the fact that Trump doesn't appear to read anything and Bill Clinton was, you know, was Oxford level in a lot of different ways. I don't know if Billy Graham would have hauled out the lumber and socked it to Donald Trump. I don't think he would have embraced Trump early and often to the same degree as, of course, as everybody's pointing out, his son Franklin Graham, a completely different man with a completely different background, a different set of problems and whatever. But at the same time, I'm very hesitant to say that we know how Billy Graham would react to some of the recent changes in American culture and threats to religious liberty, free speech, freedom of association, etc. Although we can take some guidance, perhaps, by Billy Graham's struggle to come out with a position on abortion. He was always very clear that he was pro-life, yet it was at the same time he totally refused to reject working with people who weren't. It was the old dilemma of Billy and the mainline Protestants all over again. Billy Graham, struggled to know what he would say about abortion in public life and was openly criticized by some evangelicals on that point. They thought he should have been more prophetic, or that he should have been at least as prophetic about abortion as he was in the context of the American South as he was on desegregation, being in favor of it and being, in some interesting symbolic ways, someone who was pretty upfront as a part of backing civil rights in the early 60s. One of the most symbolic actions being him bailing Martin Luther King Jr. out of jail at one point. So there's so many questions that when you ask, what would Billy have done? I don't think we know, but if we look to the past, he would have tried to find some way to have been as gracious as he could, as long as he could. Yet, we could also say that there's no evidence that he would have changed his beliefs or ultimate positions on these issues. So he was pro-life, but they said he wasn't pro-life loud enough or exclusive enough. Would he have been anti-gay marriage? I don't know. Would he be pro-religious liberty for religious believers of all kinds? Oh, yeah. I think he would have gone there. And we live in an age where all you have to do is be pro-religious liberty, be considered anti-homosexual. Even if your name is Andrew Sullivan right now, you can get booed for that. And you're a gay activist like Andrew Sullivan. So you're not hearing a certainty from me because I don't think we know. The Washington Post ran a story with the headline, "Would Billy Graham be disgusted by evangelicals today?" Great question, except I don't think he would have said anything that would have let you know what he thought about that openly, bluntly. You can turn that around. Would a lot of very conservative evangelicals be disgusted with Billy Graham today? And based on previous evidence, I think some would, because people were always wanting him to use his clout more bluntly than he did. That's a rambling answer, but That's the best I can do for you.
What you're saying is, by way of reflecting on Billy Graham, the man, his life and his work, we can probably learn a lot from those who are writing favorable things about him, but we probably learn more from his critics.
Yes. At this point, I would be paying a lot of attention to Billy Graham's critics, because I think in some ways they're being more candid, you know, than a lot of his supporters. It's a stage where, I mean, who wants to say anything bad about Billy Graham right now? The fact that some people are saying, you know, good things about him that you might find surprising, I'm just kind of letting that roll by for a minute. I will say that in the last two decades of his life, if people were just as anxious to say that Franklin was putting words in his father's mouth that made him more conservative, we had lots of other people who were cherry-picking Billy Graham quotes to try to make him more liberal, progressive, and more compromising than he actually was. Well, I'm not going to compare Billy Graham with Adolf Hitler, but there's an old saying within the world of historians that what someone writes about Adolf Hitler tells you as much about the writer as it does Adolf Hitler, especially if you're going to use Hitler as a charge to wave at somebody. Right now, what people are saying about Billy Graham often tells you a lot about the people doing the writing or the speaking, just as much as it does Billy Graham.
You had mentioned Franklin, which of his children is kind of was for a time viewed as carrier of the torch, and I don't know if that will stick, but will the media be tempted to run with this particular frame? That is, father, Billy Graham, loving and tolerant. Son, Franklin Graham, hateful and intolerant.
Well, they've been doing that, you know, for 10, 15, almost 20 years. You know, I don't think there's any question that's part of the frame we're seeing. And like all frames, there is some truth to that. As I said before, Franklin is a radically different person. I was interviewing Franklin Graham once, and he said, I don't want to shortchange my abilities. He said, but let's face it, I have about 5 to 10 to a dozen sermons that I can deliver real well, and I'm happy with my ability in the pulpit, but I am not my father. He kind of said, if you're looking for who got Billy Graham's pulpit abilities on a wider range of subjects and styles, there's no question that that would be the daughter Ann Graham Lotz, if you've ever had a chance to hear her preach. I mean, that's where the gift went, I mean, in terms of preaching. It might be interesting to see if some people focus more attention on her in the next couple of days, because she's a very conservative person on a lot of things, but she has her father's kind of refusing to pound people style, much more so than Franklin.
We're talking with Terry Mattingly about media coverage of the life and work of Billy Graham. When we come back, what the Huffington Post had to say about him in 2012. The religion of sex, the state of the church in Western society, defying the devil in international mission work. These are some of the issues addressed in our book of the month for February, The Gates of Hell, Confessing Christ in a Hostile World. It's edited by regular guest Dr. Scott Murray. Browse before you buy at issuesetc.org or call Concordia Publishing House 1-800-325-3040. The Issues Etc. book of the month, The Gates of Hell.
Memoria Press now offers 6 levels of the Simply Classical curriculum for students with special needs. These full-year curriculum packages for children with learning challenges enable you to teach reading, writing, arithmetic, art, poetry, science, history, Latin, literature, and Christian studies with incremental classical methods. Visit classicalspecialneeds.com and enter promo code LPR17 to save on resources for your home or school.
Listen to what you want, when you want. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Did you make a New Year's resolution to get in shape this year? You'll find quality personal training and qualified instruction at Performance Fitness at Edwardsville. You can even work out for a full 30 days before making a commitment to join. Visit them on the web at performancefitness618.com or call 618-692-5063. Performance Fitness can help you keep your New Year's resolution. Performance Fitness in Edwardsville. Performancefitness618.com.
Lutheran Federal Credit Union was formed to serve you and to serve the church. During February, when you open a Lutheran FCU loan to meet your financial needs, or when you use your Lutheran FCU credit card for a qualifying amount of purchases, Lutheran FCU will give you cash back and give that same amount of money to their Ministry of the Month, Family Shield Ministries. Learn more at LutheranFCU.org. Lutheran FCU, good for you, good for the church. LutheranFCU.org.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Terry Mattingly is our guest. We're talking about media coverage of the life and work of Billy Graham. Terry is Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City. He's author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion. He's also founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, here's what the Huffington Post had to say about Billy Graham. This is from a column in 2012. Michael Long writes, "But the evangelist's near endorsement of Governor Mitt Romney, which included an affirmation of the, quote, biblical definition of marriage, end quote, should serve as a revelation that for all his moderate ways, Billy Graham is just another anti-gay fundamentalist who cannot tolerate the presence of gay and lesbian couples within Christianity." That's Michael Long from 2012. What do you make of that assessment?
Well, it's interesting. You can always take some quotes of his in which he affirms traditional Christian doctrines on that. You can even find some things he said, you know, that were a bit more radical. Let me see if I can find it here quickly. Up in Massachusetts, a Newhouse organization website called Mass Live put out a very interesting question, and where they asked the public to react to the death of Billy Graham. And specifically said, is this a man who should be getting lots of compliments right now? It said, the Reverend Billy Graham, an evangelist known as America's pastor, has died at 99. Then it says some nice things about him, quoting Trump and quoting George W. Bush. Others argue that Graham's legacy should not be celebrated. He was an outspoken homophobe, statement of fact, outspoken homophobe, claiming homosexuality was, quote, a sinister form of perversion, unquote. And he created the sexist Billy Graham rules. What do you think? The sinister form of perversion, I haven't traced that back, but you want to know someone who said almost exactly those words in describing gay marriage? That would be Pope Francis, and has said very similar things about the trans movement. And the sexist Billy Graham rule, in the midst of the Me Too phenomena, a certain amount of caution in terms of avoiding sexual innuendo with relationships with professional women. I think the argument over Vice President Mike Pence, at this point, the American public seems to think that what Mike Pence does in terms of caution, in terms of his behavior around women other than his wife, the American public seems to think that that makes a whole lot of sense. That's a great quote. It tells you a lot about the fact that there are people out there who are maybe not celebrating the death of Billy Graham, but they're certainly not sorry about it at this point. And in a quiet sort of way, I think those people are celebrating that Franklin Graham lacks his father's skills. Because if Franklin Graham was smoother and more sophisticated, wouldn't he be a bigger threat to them?
So what can you tell us about the critics of Billy Graham within evangelicalism?
Well, there's a long and interesting history there. In fact, there's a whole book that could be written there. First of all, never forget that one of the most telling moments of Billy Graham's life is when he leaves Bob Jones College, which becomes Bob Jones University. The Notre Dame of fundamentalism with a large F, especially in the past. He leaves there and he goes to Wheaton College, the capital of a more northern and embracing form of conservative evangelicalism. Still conservative evangelicalism, but obviously not the same thing as the Bible Belt era Deep South Bob Jones conservatism. And while there, he meets and marries the person that I think is the Rosetta Stone to almost anything you would want to know about Billy Graham, and that's he meets and marries Ruth Bell, who was the daughter of mainline Presbyterian missionaries to China. And a lot of people forget that all of those years on the side of that mountain outside Montreat, North Carolina, outside of Asheville, that while married to the best known Southern Baptist in the world, Ruth Bell Graham kept walking down the hill to the local Presbyterian church and remained a Presbyterian her entire life. And one time when I interviewed Billy Graham there at their home in North Carolina, you know, Billy kept stressing, he said, "Never forget that there's only one person in this family who can read New Testament Greek, and it's not me." He said, you know, Ruth in many ways is the brains in this operation. Now, he's selling himself short there, of course. He has a different kind of candlewatt power brain-wise, but he was always very clear about the fact that if you wanted to know about what influenced Billy Graham a lot, you should look at his wife as one of the best indicators of that. How would Ruth Bell Graham handle the current day and age and its challenges? Well, she might handle it the way she handled Franklin. She praised Franklin and she criticized Franklin. She did both. She was herself and spoke her mind. I think Billy, in his own subtle and gracious ways, would have done the same. Then you move into the Roe v. Wade era of criticism of Billy, and you get to a really interesting point. I think the divisions that begin forming out of the sexual revolution and the cultural revolution were the biggest challenges that Billy Graham faced. And don't forget, though, that at exactly the same time, you have the collapse of his friendship and his relationship with Richard Nixon, which at that exact point made Billy sit back and say, maybe America isn't the most important thing in the world. Maybe the future of Christianity is in the global South and in the rest of the world. And in response to his own failures in terms of his relationship with Richard Nixon, and remember, all of that occurs right about the same time as Roe v. Wade, Billy becomes a much more global Christian and begins focusing more of his attention on what becomes the Lausanne Committee for World Evangelization. And he begins to say, maybe the future, the ultimate hope in this world, maybe the hope isn't America. And in a way, that's a positive affirmation of what Billy saw happening in third world Christianity, specifically Asia, Latin America, and Africa. But at the same time, isn't that kind of an interesting judgment on Billy Graham's part about America? That this guy who had all the patriotic elements of his crusades and all that, all of a sudden, Billy's backing away and saying, we got to be careful here. We can't assume that America is doing what God wants America to do. So in that period of time, you begin to have folks, I remember a very interesting cover story at World Magazine, which basically criticized Billy Graham for not using his bully pulpit as much as he could to fight against Roe v. Wade. Now, Graham, once again, made it clear what he believed, but he would not crusade on the issue of abortion. He just wasn't going to do that. he believed that would, in part, tear up the interracial nature of his crusades, because it would turn it once again into a Democratic thing versus a Republican thing over that issue. And Graham was not going to let that happen in terms of dividing him from African-American churches and Latino churches and others. So from that point on, you had people worried about whether Billy was being outspoken enough. So where would that put him today? I said earlier, I'm not sure. I don't know. But I know what he would believe. The issue is, what would he do publicly to advocate those beliefs? One is a matter of theology. The second is a matter of strategy. And I don't think we know what Billy would do.
Terry Mattingly is our guest. We're talking about media coverage of the life and work of Billy Graham. When we come back, do we know whether or not Billy Graham was a Republican or a Democrat? Concordia University, Wisconsin offers 50 online educational options for an associate's, bachelor's, or master's degree, and they'll waive your application fee when you use the promo code ISSUES. Learn more by clicking the Concordia University, Wisconsin online logo at issuesetc.org and enter the coupon code ISSUES. Lifelong Lutheran learning, Concordia University, Wisconsin online. Stay tuned.
Smartest listeners in radio, you're listening to Issues Etc.
We have a special offer for first-time donors to Issues Etc. For any size gift during the months of January and February, we'll send you an autographed copy of Pastor Will Wheaton's new book, Thank, Praise, Serve, and Obey, Recover the Joys of Piety. Make your first-time contribution online at issuesetc.org or send your check to Issues Etc., Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234, and we'll send you an autographed copy of Thank, Praise, Serve, and Obey.
The grace of God, the church's music, the Lord's Supper every service every Sunday, preaching Christ crucified and risen, our hope for years to come. There is hope in St. Louis, Hope Lutheran Church, that is. 5218 Neosho Street, St. Louis, Missouri. Find us on the web at hopelutheranstl.org.
"40 Years Greatly Blessed" is this year's theme at Metro East Lutheran High School in Edwardsville, Illinois. We engage young adults in a Christ-centered environment and provide an alternative to secular public high schools. Please help us provide tuition assistance to more students by making a special 40th anniversary tax-deductible gift at melhs.org and click on the giving page, or call me, Dr. Jay Krause, principal, at 618-656-0043.
O Lord, hear my prayer.
Listen to chapel services live weekday mornings from Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Morning chapel from Kramer Chapel. Live weekday mornings at 9 Central, 10 Eastern, 8 Mountain, and 7 Pacific at issuesetc.org.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking with Terry Mattingly about media coverage of the life and work of Billy Graham. A few more minutes with him, then Dr. Scott Murray is going to join us. We'll take up the subject of the religion of sex. He says it's not just a sexual revolution or social change. It is a religion. We'll find out why a little bit later here on Issues Etc. Terry, speaking of the late Dr. Billy Graham, do we know if Graham was a Republican or a Democrat?
Well, he was a registered Democrat, and I don't know of him ever changing his registration. But Billy grew up in a time when you could be a complete, total cultural conservative and be a Southern Democrat, a Blue Dog Democrat in the Texas language that I grew up with. He was very close to LBJ, but that's before Roe v. Wade. He's very close to Richard Nixon. That pulls us into that era. He was an advisor and counselor and subtle critic of Bill Clinton. And like I said earlier, if we're trying to decide whether Billy would have turned into a club-them-over-the-head advocate of religious conservatism, I think you have to study how he handled or didn't handle Bill Clinton. He said lots of very positive things about Bill Clinton. And he also said things like, all of us struggle, all of us need God, pray for him. He'd make that kind of subtle comment. There's one other thing I want to mention here. Never forget how cautious and careful Billy Graham's public relations people and his personal staff were. I was researching a story about Billy in the mid to late 80s, right before he came to Denver to preach a crusade. And I interviewed a lot of people that had been close to Billy Graham for a long time, including his own sister and her husband, the famous evangelist Leighton Ford. And they all had some very interesting and candid things to say. And one of the things I heard more than once was a fascinating story. After the Nixon debacle, and during that period of time in the early 70s, Graham began to make his handlers uncomfortable. He began to say a lot of things about nuclear weapons. He famously went to a nuclear weapons conference in Moscow, which earned him some negative press from conservatives and others. He began to change some of the music. He began to hang out more with Johnny Cash, you know, and part of the subtlety of this was, whether it was a coincidence or not, Graham happened to let his hair grow a little longer than it had been. It began to kind of come down over his collar, and his sideburns began to get a little bit longer. And the way I heard the story, this was of great concern. And one day, the staff was all sitting at a table, and they're all telling Billy, "Billy, we're really worried about how this is going to go down with your supporters and with donors. We, you know, we're not so sure what you're trying to do here, but Billy," and they're all trying to avoid Billy, "we think you need a haircut." And they're kind of going on and on and on, and there's this long pause, and Billy is sitting there silent. But on the other side of the room, there's a voice that nobody is used to hearing in these debates. On the other side of the room, there's a quiet voice, and it's Ruth Bell Graham saying, "Actually, I asked him to grow a beard." And the people who told me this story said everybody knew what that was. And that was not just, "Leave my husband's hair alone." It was, "Leave my husband alone. He's just gone through a lot. He's doing what he can. He's making his way. Leave my husband alone, you guys." And out of all the stories I heard researching that huge piece on Billy Graham, that was my favorite, because I thought it captured kind of more of the human dynamics inside the Graham organization and in the ultimate inside circle of Billy and Ruth. Now, you better believe Ruth Bell Graham, from all indications based on interviews I've done with people who knew her, Ruth spoke her mind. But she did it when it was the two of them alone. And she was blunt, but then she was publicly supportive of what her husband did. But what her husband did and what her husband said wasn't always the same thing as being supportive of everything that Billy Graham Inc. did, incorporated, or the team did. I love that story and kind of the implications of it. What did the two of them think when they were sitting out on the back porch looking at the mountains and talking? That's what we would have to know to be able to answer some of these questions.
I want you to deal with the phrase that's probably going to appear in most leads, because, of course, the press, as you point out in a recent piece, is struggling a bit to articulate in their lead what Billy Graham was. They use all different kinds of adjectives. Was he a preacher? Was he an evangelist, evangelical, all those kinds of things. But the one that's going to appear most is, in quotes, America's pastor. But you point out he spent very, very little time pastoring a real congregation.
Yeah, but they were saying, and I heard that phrase and I used it in my column this week. I had a different column written for this week. I woke up like the rest of America on Wednesday morning. I sat down at my desk. I was doing the final gloss on a column I had already written. And then I saw Twitter. You know, I saw the first tweets coming in. That was at about 8:20 in the morning. My column was due at the Syndicate at 11 or 12 Eastern time. And all of a sudden I was faced with the trying to write a Billy Graham column in 2 to 3 hours. I have about 10 inches of file folders of notes on Billy Graham clips. Now, I'm talking that my stack would be 10 inches deep of file folders. There was no way I could pull up the hours of interview tapes that I have with Billy Graham. But I had decided long ago that I was going to write my Billy Graham obituary based on his sermon at the Oklahoma City bombing. And I chose that sermon for a very specific reason, and it was to avoid the essential question that we're discussing here. Is he a political public figure, or is he a Christian evangelist religious leader? And the answer, of course, is that he's both. And all of that is captured in the phrase, America's pastor. Of course, you can't pastor America the way you actually serve as a pastor of a local congregation, something that Billy Graham only did and was very bad at it for a very short period of time. According to himself, he was very bad at it before he went into full-time evangelism. If you're going to put one label on Billy Graham, it has to be evangelist, period. But I picked the Billy Graham sermon in Oklahoma City for two reasons. One, he was completely, totally evangelical. Facing an audience of Bible Belt people, he talked about heaven, he talked about hell, he talked about don't let your heart get bitter and hurt your relationship with God. He talked about the heart being fickle, and he quoted Jeremiah, and he did all the things you would expect Billy Graham to do. But he also answered and tried to answer some of the big questions, which is what, isn't that what we ask pastors to do in the pulpit at times? Why did this happen? Why did my child die? How do we make sense of this? And he did all of that with the President of the United States and Hillary, I would note, sitting in the front row and cameras aimed at him with every single cable channel in America, probably except maybe ESPN, going live for that memorial service about, at that time, the shocking bombing of Oklahoma City, the federal building. I wrote about that. That was my way of condensing the life of Billy Graham into something that I could get into a 700 or 800 word column, because it was both halves of the real man occupying the same pulpit at the same time. But the way I put it in the column was, Billy Graham didn't give an altar call at the end of that sermon, but he could have. It would have been in bad taste to do an altar call at a memorial service for 160-plus people who die in a bombing, in a terrorist bombing. But when you look at the content of what he said, he was about one paragraph away from being able to give an altar call, which meant the essential core Billy Graham was in that pulpit. with the President of the United States, looking straight up at him. He was both Billy Grahams at the same time, and that's why I chose that that moment to write about him. And if you also, another subtlety about my piece is you see that I didn't try to label him. I tried to quote him and tried to put him in a specific context. But then again, I wasn't writing a hard news story that was going to run on page one of a newspaper, like a major obituary of a figure like Billy Graham. I wasn't writing a news story. I was writing a column. And I had a lot more freedom to do what I wanted to do. And that's why I did what I did.
On Wednesday morning, I saw the news about 7:15. I was at my daughter's house watching my grandkids. She's 27. And I said, well, I'm going to have to leave a little early. Billy Graham died. And she kind of gave me a sidelong look. I said, you know who that is? And she said, I've heard the name. Well, you know, he's been inactive for about the last 20 years in a lot of ways. It occurred to me, well, you know, he's going to be called America's pastor. And that leads to this question for you finally here with about a minute, Terry. When did he stop being America's pastor and who took his place?
Well, no one will ever take his place because we aren't the same country. We are now the country of the internet with about 20 digitally defined warring camps. We are not the America of Billy Graham any more than we are the America of Walter Cronkite. And you could make a case that we can't even have one president right now. So how would Billy handle the new America? I don't know. But the reason I picked the Oklahoma City bombing sermon, the other reason I picked it was there's no question that at that moment, in that pulpit, Billy Graham was still America's pastor. By the time we get 9/11 and you look at his remarks at 9/11, it's very clear that Billy was beginning to pull back a little and wasn't as certain about what he could say to this new country and to the world we were in. So sometime between Oklahoma City and 9/11, we didn't lose Billy. But America changed so much that it was harder for Billy Graham to be Billy Graham. Does that make any sense?
Terry Mattingly, a senior fellow for media and religion at the King's College in New York City. He's author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion. He is founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, thanks for being our guest.
Glad to be here.
When we come back, we're going to talk about the religion of sex. Dr. Scott Murray will be our guest. He's editor of the Issues, Etc., Book of the Month for February, The Gates of Hell, Confessing Christ in a Hostile World. Stay tuned.
Thanks to generous supporters, tuition for all incoming residential pastoral ministry and deaconess students at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana, will be paid in full. Hi, this is Dr. Lawrence Rast, president of Concordia Theological Seminary. Learn more about studying for the vocations of pastor or deaconess in the 2018-19 academic year at ctsfw.edu.
An average of 20 military veterans kill themselves every day. Project Operation Barnabas is a network of LCMS congregations who reach out to veterans and their congregations and their communities with the gospel of Jesus Christ. Operation Barnabas is a program of LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces. Find out more at lcms.org/armedforces. Serving those who serve. LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces, lcms.org/armedforces.
Education and edification. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Emily finally had to face the truth. Her church choir was a mess.
Katie Schuerman from her new audiobook, House of Living Stones.
Sure, they'd managed to turn out a few decent choral offerings for Sunday worship every now and then, but their confidence and morale were presently hanging lower than pants on a wrapper.
You can purchase and download an audio version of the novel House of Living Stones at Amazon, Audible, and iTunes. House of Living Stones by Katie Schuerman.